the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 14th day of November 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, getting the word out there, spreading the word. I appreciate it more than I could. I say it every day, but that's because I appreciate it every day. And thank you for that. And thanks for rating and reviewing on iTunes. We've gotten over 250 written reviews. Thanks to those of you who've done it. Next stop, 300, which will probably take forever. But still, let's get there. And the star reviews were fast approaching 1,000. So thank you for that. If you just pluck on that little button and share on social media and do whatever it is you do, that you talk to people, your friends who are involved in politics, who aren't interested. I think this show appeals to people who aren't necessarily interested in politics, because you look at politics, you look at other political shows, and it's dry, it's boring, it's somebody reading a script they've written or somebody yelling and gyrating around, and like, what's wrong with you, dude? Just talk like a normal human being. Well, this is a show for normal human beings to talk about the news of the day with a sense of humor. You got to have a sense of humor, or at least appreciate a sense of humor to enjoy this show. And I think that's what differentiates it from everybody else tries so hard to be funny. It just spews out of me like vomit after a night of heavy drinking. It's a charming image, but I think it's an accurate description. We got a lot of stuff to get to. It was a busy, busy day up there on Capitol Hill. That's what they got. You know, I watched most of that hearing, or as much of it as I possibly could. I was on the air doing my radio show for the first 2 hours of it, and I don't feel like I missed anything, because it was just replay after replay after replay. And I just, we'll get in. I want to talk about the format as well as play a lot of audio from the show yesterday. And we'll have another show. Part two, Electric Boogaloo, is coming up on Friday. So don't tune out just yet. I think Democrats are kind of licking their wounds after yesterday, though, because it was incredible. Hearsay, third hand, fourth hand information. Unbelievable that they're going to try to impeach a president over, first of all, over this crap. Even if everything they said was true, they're going to try and impeach a president over that. Then they've got the absolute cavernous holes that Republicans blew in the side of their case, and they're still chugging along. They're like the captain of the Titanic. Well, not really, because he was asleep when they hit the iceberg. But if the captain of the Titanic had seen the iceberg and said, you know what, that iceberg's going to swerve. That'll swerve. Don't worry, we got this thing. We'll get into all of it and other stuff that's going on out there, although it's mostly going to be about impeachment day one, because, good Lord, I don't know if Republicans could have scripted a better hearing. Normally, the minority in a hearing doesn't do that well. The deck is stacked against them. But when you don't have a case, when your opponents don't have a case, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're just going to make it up, because you know that who's going to call you out on it? NBC News, ABC News, CBS News, CNN? No way. Never. It's nice. They're full of it. Now, hear me out. Before we get into the show and talk about our sponsor, but hear me out, because you heard me talk about this for a while, this Life Change Tea. And you heard me say that it's a game changer, and it is a game changer, and it gets you more energy and it cleans you out. It's the tea that makes you go, as you say, and you sat there and you said, I don't need to go. You might go every day, but that doesn't mean that everything gets out of you, and that's what Life Change Tea does. It cleans you out thoroughly so that you can absorb, your body can absorb the food, the nutrition in the food that you consume. There's less nutrition in our food now. It's heavily processed. They're processing the good stuff out of our food, which means there's less good stuff in our food. Your body needs every chance it can to get to absorb all of the good stuff that's left in our food, and that's where Life Change Tea comes. And you just drink a cup of it a day. You get a month's supply, and it makes a big difference. You will see it. check it out. Use as directed. Don't overdo it. Trust me on that. But make sure that your body is cleaned out of that stuff that's just lingering around that you don't need anymore, that you don't need, that's actually hurting you, that's causing you to not absorb all the nutrition in your food. Don't take my word for it. Give it a shot. Try it for yourself. Go to our sponsor. I know that so many of you have so far, and I appreciate that. The rest of you, get on it. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. You get more energy. I do drink it every day. It's not available in stores. Just go to getthetea.com, enter promo code Derek at checkout, and boom, you get free shipping. Try it once. You'll be hooked, and you'll be saying, why didn't I do this before? What have I been waiting for? Well, wait no longer. Go to getthetea.com, enter promo code Derek at checkout, and you'll thank me for it. Okay, we start off with impeachment because this is impeachment. I watched 4 hours, 5 hours of driving in the car, have satellite in the car, listening to it as I'm driving. It was nothing. I mean, if this is the best case you got, if this is the opening argument, the opening salvo of the Democrats on impeachment, the White House has to be feeling really good today. And by all reports, the White House is feeling very good today. I have the perfect summary. It's about 12 seconds long, but this sums up all of the testimony that was heard yesterday, pretty much.
Heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another. You've been messing around.
I had to leave a little flourish in there at the end with the guitar, because why not? But yes, yesterday was an REO Speedwagon song. Take it on the run, baby. It was secondhand information from third-hand sources who heard it from somebody else, who heard it from another person, who then passed it on, and their interpretation of what they think they might have heard, well, gee whiz, golly willikers, it just, my spidey sense was tingling, the hair on my arm stood up, and therefore it had to have been a quid pro quo, even though it wasn't a quid pro quo, even though nobody was aware that it was going on, so on and so forth. It was such a damn joke. We heard yesterday from William Taylor, who is the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and George Kent, who is a senior State Department official who specializes in Ukraine. And they had their own ideas of what the United States policy should be toward Ukraine. They were very upset with the President of the United States that he would consider holding up aid to Ukraine in order to make sure that they were rooting out corruption in their government, which has been known for, well, since the fall of communism and since the overthrow of their dictatorship, has been known as just a corrupt playground. And these guys are going, well, I don't, there are better ways to do this. You must go through official channels, not back channels, so on and so forth. Of course, in foreign policy, there is a long and storied history of presidents setting up back channels to deal with foreign countries, to set up going outside the norms. Why would you do that? Because the president just doesn't say, hey, ambassador, go talk to the president of this country. You can't just, if you're an ambassador, you can't just get to the president of a country. You have to go through bureaucrats. There are protocols to go through. Official records must be kept. But if you want to get a message to the president because you think that maybe there's a loose link or faulty link in the chain, maybe somebody who's dipping their pen in the company inkwell, something like that, somebody who's double dipping, maybe somebody who is working against what is in the best interest of both countries, you don't want to go through that official chain of command because, well, one of them is weak. One of them might be working against it because it doesn't fit their needs. So you establish unofficial back channels. Oh, you know somebody who actually knows the president? Well, see if we can get a message to them through this way. Most of the Cuban Missile Crisis was alleviated not through official channels of ambassadors smoking cigars and having a chat about what we should do with missiles in Cuba versus missiles in Europe, so on and so forth. No, it was done through unofficial channels, through back channels, through people who knew some people. And it worked, thank God, or I never would have been, and everybody who was old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis would have ended. That is how diplomacy is done a lot of times. Everybody thinks that, these diplomats, they know best. They know what's going on. Not always. Not if a policy has not worked for a very long time. Diplomats are not really all that malleable when it comes to trying something new. And these two witnesses yesterday were prime examples of that. They were very concerned about the president's decisions regarding corruption in Ukraine. It's none of their business. If they care so much, run for office or quit your job and campaign for somebody, come out and endorse somebody who will continue the policies that have led to a decade or more of corruption in Ukraine. And you think, well, we're just on the cusp of changing things. If we just stick with what hasn't worked yet, sooner or later it will work. It's that, remember that definition of insanity that they make a joke about, that's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? Well, in the diplomatic corps a lot of times, and in policy just in general, some people get this sense that if they just keep doing what they're doing, even though it hasn't worked yet, it will eventually. It has to. There just has to come this breakthrough moment. And Donald Trump doesn't really seem like somebody who's going to sit around and wait for that to work. He's got his own ideas. And after all, he's president of the United States. So maybe it's a foreign concept to the foreign policy patrol out there that maybe, just maybe, things could be done or should be done or would be more effectively done if done differently. But I think there's also this arrogance in foreign policy that they know. Look, I understand. I have lived in country X. You're trying to come in here and try something new with country X, but I know country X. I have lived there. I have studied there. I know lots of people there. So your crazy ideas, they'll never work. And they'll give you all kinds of reasons why they'll never work, but they'll never try them, because they're married to the ideas that have brought us to whatever problematic point we find ourselves in. Well, Donald Trump is not one of those kind of guys who just sits back and accepts things. Now, is he always right? No, I'm sure there were plenty of things that any president could and should handle differently. But the difference is, they were president of the United States. Some bureaucrat has an idea. The best they can do is pitch it, make a case for it. And if they cannot convince the president that that is the right course of action, the only options available to them are buck up and go, okay, well, I made my best case. I didn't win. Or resign. Because they don't get to say, well, screw that guy, I'm going to do it my way anyway. They don't get to say, screw that guy, I'm going to try and literally ruin that guy's presidency. Because how dare he challenge me? He doesn't know. I'm the one who knows. That's not the way our country works. That's not the way our country is supposed to work. That's not the way our country is designed to work. But as we're finding out through this Democratic show trial, that, in a lot of ways, is how our bureaucracy does work against the president of the United States. Let's go to the clips in no particular order, but just to put a fine point on that REO Speedwagon song, the game of telephone that was the hearing yesterday. Literally, there was nothing firsthand that anybody offered up. Let's listen to Ambassador Taylor say basically all he can offer is secondhand information. He was more than willing, giddy, in fact, to offer secondhand information, which in reality is meaningless. Here he is.
Mr. Goldman, what I can do here for you today is tell you what I heard from people.
I can tell you what I heard from people. I was not involved in any of this. I don't know, and I didn't see anything. I'm Sergeant Schultz. When it comes to everything else, I know nothing, I see nothing, I don't know anything at all. But, yeah, I can tell you what I heard from people. Really, you can tell me what you heard from people. Now, who are these people? Did these people hear it firsthand? And in most cases, no, they did not. In fact, the two witnesses yesterday who are out there outraged at what the president had done. Oh, my goodness. Can you believe that the president might have done something? I don't know for sure because I haven't really heard from anybody except for anybody directly involved. But I heard from second and third hand sources that he'd done something. They not only had not had any involvement in the stuff they were testifying about, the phone call, namely, and the alleged quid pro quo, they've never spoken to the president of the United States. Neither one of them have ever spoken to the president of the United States. How can you talk about what the president was doing and why he was doing it? And that's really what they were there for. We know what he was doing, but why was he doing it? He had to have been doing it because he wanted to put pressure on Ukraine to investigate sweet Joe Biden, who never did nothing to nobody. Never did nothing. I mean, unless you're a woman who happens to be around him, and then he, you know, might have groped you, grabbed you, sniffed your hair or something like that. But other than that, he's done nothing to nobody. Never, ever, ever. And they've never talked to the president, so they don't really know. They're just, what, did they bust out their crystal ball? They whip out the Ouija board and try and figure it out? Did they ask the ghosts of bureaucrats past what the president really was up to? That's about the quality of the information that they had when you realize the source. Now, none of that stopped either of them from making declarative statements. They made absolute positive declarative statements, and then upon cross-examination, they had to admit, well, you know, I didn't hear that myself, but, you know, the deputy undersecretary of making sure that the mail is delivered inside the embassy, he sure told me what was going on. It was so bad, in fact, for Democrats that the legal analyst over at CNN, Jeffrey Toobin, who's a despicable human being, although he did write the book that great miniseries about O.J. Simpson was based on, the ride of his life, or the run of his life, or whatever the hell it was. Great miniseries on TV. He wrote that book. But Jeffrey Toobin, who despises the president of the United States, who earlier this year apologized to Hillary Clinton for writing about and talking about her emails so much because he was riddled with guilt that might have hurt her candidacy. Even Jeffrey Toobin had to admit that the Democrats have a bit of a problem here, because everything that people are hearing, the American people are hearing as they tune in for day one of this shift show, was secondhand information that neither of these people have ever spoken to the president of the United States. Here's him saying that on CNN. I imagine after this segment on CNN, he was pummeled. Jeff Zucker pulled him aside and picked him up by his lapels and said, look, I don't care that you had an affair with a colleague and got the woman pregnant, a colleague's daughter, by the way, got her pregnant without, you know, Toobin was married, had an affair, got her pregnant and tried to pressure her to have an abortion and then denied paternity until ultimately losing in court. I don't care about that. You can be as big a scumbag personally as you can ever want to be. I have no problem with that. You'll fit in right here at CNN. If you do just a little bit of Googling, you can see about the personnel and the personal lives of the CNN TV personalities. You'll see what I'm talking about. Just look up the last name King, and you can figure out some CNN personnel and some interesting stories there. But you can put up with that. But how dare you expose the weakness of the Democrats' case on impeachment. That is unacceptable, Jeffrey Toobin. I'm sure he got a good talking to, and he'll never make this mistake again. But in a rare moment of honesty, CNN let this slip on air out of the mouth of Jeffrey Toobin.
Because the one criticism of these two witnesses, which I think is very much legitimate, it's not really a criticism, it's just a factual statement, is that neither of them had direct contact with the president.
Ever.
Ever. And, yeah. And you know, that's a problem if you're going to impeach the president.
You think, Jeff? You think? I'm going to tell you what the president did, what I know, and well, what do you know? Well, somebody told me that somebody else said that they saw this one thing. Oh. Okay, well then, geez, that makes perfect sense. Stop the presses. Jeffrey Toobin over on CNN. The problem that they have is they've never actually interacted with the president of the United States. So then how can they testify about the actions of the president of the United States? They not only have never met the president of the United States, they've never spoken to the president of the United States on the phone or otherwise. Again, the Democrat, when you are trying to put on a case this charged, you don't start weak and then build up. Democrats know that they have a very narrow window of time to really capture the attention and hold the attention of the American people. We'll get bored of this really quickly if there's nothing. If this is just garbage, gobbledygook, secondhand rumor information, stuff that, you know, is scribbled on the bathroom wall in high school, that level of stuff, the American people are going to go, okay, when is the good stuff supposed to happen? Now, some Democrats thought they got some good stuff yesterday, except that it was all second and third hand and fourth hand information. It was all gobbledygook. It was garbage. There was nothing there. You cannot testify to what you did not see, to what you did not hear, to what you do not know. Yet that is what happened yesterday. It was straight up. I didn't see this with my own eyes. I wasn't even there that much. I don't know what's going on. What's funny is Democrats began to realize this throughout the hearing, and they tried to massage it. They tried to make ridiculous claims. They tried to downplay it or ignore it. Each one of them had their own little strategy. Most of them just yielded their time back to Adam Schiff. And if a member of Congress is yielding their time back to Adam Schiff rather than asking questions themselves, it's because they don't know where to go with these witnesses. If you see a low-hanging piece of fruit that you think you can really score some points with, you're not going to give your time to Adam Schiff. I have 5 minutes to ask questions. I can really nail this one fine point down. Be the hero. Be the star. Be the, you know, Democrats across the country will put posters of me on their wall. And you see that and you go, but you know what? Never mind. I'm going to yield back to Adam Schiff. That's not how politics works, ladies and gentlemen. If any of these people thought that they could come up with some sort of light bulb or aha moment, they would take it in a heartbeat. The money that would flow to their campaign, the prestige that would flow to them, the television hits that would flow to them if they had a viral moment in this hearing there or in any one of these hearings, they would never cede that to the committee chairman, ever. That almost to a complete person on the Democratic side, they simply said, you know, you're great patriots. Wow, you two are great. Did you know that your grandparents served in the military? And that means that you are infallible for all eternity. It was kind of ridiculous, but that was what they were doing. There was one member, however, who tried to polish the turd that is this case and is day one. Now, remember, it's all hearsay, second and third hand information. And knowing this was hitting home, knowing this was doing damage to the Democrats' credibility, Congressman Mike Quigley stepped up and he tried to. He said something like, I assume everybody interested in injustice, not just lawyers, not at people, judges, not people who understand the law, but people who have actually seen like an episode of Law and Order, will hear this and go, what in the hell are you talking about, dude? But this is how these people are willing to beclown themselves to try and polish the turd that was yesterday's hearing. Here is Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley.
Because the courts have routinely allowed and created needed exceptions to hearsay. Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct, as we have learned in painful instances, and it's certainly valid in this instance. Well,
in this impeachment hearing today, where we impeach presidents for treason or bribery or other high crimes, where is the impeachable offense in that call? Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
The faint cough you could hear in the distance was the answer. That wasn't even on microphone. That was somebody in the crowd or somebody else up there on the panel doing the questioning. They had no answer. What's the impeachable offense? That should be the question. Now, the Democrats will say, well, the president has abused his power. Okay. Can't really do that in this circumstance, but I'll entertain it. How did the president abuse his power? Well, he was asking for a favor of that. No, he wasn't. Again, 540 words between do me a favor and any mention of Biden. Both presidents spoke in that time. The president asked for a favor in investigating how Ukraine was involved in screwing around with the 2016 election, something that had been widely reported in the press. I read you the story yesterday, I think, from Politico. But no, that was on the radio. So I'll tell you about it now. But you have this situation where you just ask the basic question, where is the impeachable offense? And they have no answer for it because there is no impeachable offense back on January 11th of 2017 before Donald Trump took office. Politico reported that the Ukrainian government it was the previous Ukrainian government, but they were trying to make nice with the Trump administration, the incoming Trump administration, because they did not count on him winning. They didn't think he was going to win. And so they had worked with Democrats trying to ingratiate themselves to Democrats to try to make sure they got favorable treatment. Wait a second, that would almost be like a quid pro quo, except in reverse. But yes, that is how this crap worked in Washington before Donald Trump. If you suck up to who you think is going to win the presidency, then when they do win the presidency, you've already pre-sucked up to them. You get great things. You get wonderful favors. They remember you. Well, not so much anymore, but that's the problem for the Democrats to figure out and the problem for the people of Ukraine to figure out. But Politico was desperate to report before Donald Trump became president. The headline of the story is Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. What? Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. This is, again, 2017, before Donald Trump actually takes office, a full 9 days before Donald Trump takes office. They helped, they also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter. They suggested they were investigating the matter in order to help Hillary Clinton. Did anybody involved in the Clinton campaign or the Democratic Party work with Ukrainians to try to facilitate that? Yes, they did. More on that in a second. And they continue, and they helped Clinton allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors, a Politico investigation found. This story hasn't been retracted. This story hasn't been updated or edited. This story is as it was back on January 11th, 2017. Next paragraph. A Ukrainian-American operative who was consulting for the Democratic National Committee met with top officials in the Ukrainian embassy in Washington in an effort to expose ties between Trump, top campaign aide Paul Manafort, and Russia, according to people with direct knowledge of the situation. Wait a second. I thought that seeking anything of value in any way, shape, or form from anybody, not only who's a foreigner, but maybe even with a foreign accent, is a high crime and misdemeanor and a threat to the very fabric of our democracy. Yet here is Politico. One of the reporters who wrote this is a guy called Ken Vogel, who is now with the New York Times, and everybody knows that their credibility is impeccable and unimpeachable. Why isn't this a story? Why isn't this still a story? Why don't Democrats care about this anymore? Well, they don't. Because, well, it's Democrats doing stuff. Why wasn't this diplomat or this consultant on the payroll of the Democratic National Committee questioned? Why aren't we finding out whether or not this person was following orders from the Clinton campaign, for example, to go to the Ukrainian embassy, to go to a foreign government? And since it took place in the Ukrainian embassy, to do so on foreign soil, to solicit help from a foreign government to try and get information or launch a investigation into a political rival, which again is not what happened in the Ukraine call with the President of the United States, but is what Democrats are saying happened. And that was the wrongest thing anybody's ever done in the history of wrong things. Yet here it is, Politico, the President, or Hillary Clinton, the presumptive president-elect, they wanted to publicly question his fitness for office. That's a direct quote. They also disseminated documents implicating a Trump top aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter. What? Now, did this Democratic operative go to the Ukrainian officials and request that they make this announcement, that they are investigating this Trump campaign official? Apparently they did. The story, once it became unhelpful, once Hillary Clinton lost and Donald Trump won and the media decided that they were going to join with the Democrats to try and impeach the President of the United States, suddenly reporting on this angle, this story went the way of the dodo. They're no longer interested in this story. Seems to me that there are still a lot of threads out there that would be worth pulling, but Schiff isn't going to call anybody involved in this. The Ukrainian effort, again, Politico reports, and I know you've probably heard this before, but you can't hear it too often. The Ukrainian effort had an impact in the race, helping to force Manafort's resignation and advancing the narrative that Trump's campaign was deeply connected to Ukraine's foe to the east, Russia. Isn't that very interesting? No Democrat yesterday wanted to talk about this. A few Republicans brought it up. The witnesses then said, that's not my area of expertise. I don't know anything about that. I wasn't in town that month. But ultimately, it boils down to what you just heard Congressman John Ratliff say. Where's the impeachable offense? If what President Trump is alleged to have done is so awful that it warrants, it's such a threat to our democracy that it warrants removal from office, essentially the negating of the last presidential election. If it's that damned important, then why isn't it important that we find out what the Democrats were doing in regards to working with Ukraine to defeat Donald Trump in 2016? Well, we all know the answer to that. It's different when Democrats do it. God, it's good to be a Democrat. There was a lot of talk yesterday about Burisma Holdings and Hunter Biden. Burisma is the oligarch-owned company that has been under corruption investigation many, many, many times. And the company that paid Hunter Biden just a ton of money. A ton of money. Let's listen to Mr. Kent yesterday. He actually addressed this a little bit. And this did not, if you just watched your local news and if you just watched the nightly news, this really wasn't a focus for Democrats because it again bolsters the case that Republicans are making that there's a lot of shady stuff going on around the Biden family. Whether or not Joe is corrupt, you can believe that. He seems kind of aw shucksy to the point that he might not have known about this or understood it. He's not all there upstairs. But the people in this room yesterday understand it. Democrats in Congress understand it. And they're desperate to make sure that the American people never hear it to even have to consider understanding it. Listen to this, because Mr. Kent actually lays out a much more damning case against Hunter Biden and Joe Biden than I think he even realizes.
Case of a longstanding problem of corruption in Ukraine included exposure to a situation involving the energy company Burisma. The primary concern of the U.S. government since 2014 was Burisma's owner, Mykola Zlochevsky, whose frozen assets abroad we had attempted to recover on Ukraine's behalf. In early 2015, I raised questions with the Deputy Prosecutor General about why the investigation of Mr. Zlochevsky had been terminated, based on our belief that prosecutors had accepted bribes to close the case. Later, I became aware that Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma. Soon after that, in a briefing call with the National Security Staff of the Office of the Vice President in February of 2015, I raised my concern that Hunter Biden's status as a board member could create the perception of a conflict of interests.
So the U.S. government knew for a long time that there were a lot of corruption. There was a lot of corruption surrounding Burisma and its billionaire owner. And they were investigating it. They were, in fact, encouraging the investigation of it. This guy had alleged to ripped off a lot of money in the past. And then, lo and behold, while the U.S. government had known that this person was pretty shady, the son of the vice president, with no expertise in Ukraine, no language abilities in Ukrainian. I don't even know if he'd ever actually been to Ukraine before he got this sweetheart gig where he was paid between $50,000 and $80,000 a month plus, more than that. Paid a ton of money. Suddenly he gets a job on the board, this no-show job. They went to like Monaco once a year to have their annual board meeting where they were all wined and dined. And Hunter Biden never thought for a second, hey, this is a pretty sweet deal that I just got offered. I don't have to do anything and I just get paid tons. I get mailbox money. That's a pretty sweetheart deal. And nobody in the vice president's inner circle, after having been briefed by it, by Mr. Kent here, he admits, look, I said on this conference call, this presents the appearance of impropriety, appearance of conflict of interest, because it does. You're railing as the United States government about how corrupt this company is, and how corrupt this government is, and now the guy who is the point person for the Obama administration on Ukrainian policy, his son is on the board suddenly with no expertise in the industry, no expertise on the culture, no understanding of the language, nothing. Just suddenly he shows up, he's on the board one day. Even if, and this is a huge if, but even if it's all on the up and up with Hunter Biden, it should have raised alarm bells as a conflict of interest. In politics and in the law, you're supposed to try and avoid conflicts of interest. So even though, well, if it were on the up and up, if everything were just peachy keen, still the vice president should have told his son, look, you can't take this job. And if Hunter Biden, as a sentient being and an adult who can make his own decisions, said, sorry, Dad, I don't care what you say. I don't care how bad it makes you look and what kind of situation this puts you in. It's a ton of money. And all I've got to do is go to Morocco or Monaco, one of the two, for a week a year. And it's a paid vacation, first class all the way. I'm not giving that up for your little conflict of interest business. At that point, then what should have happened is Joe should have put Hunter over his knee and spanked him. But no, what he should have done is he should have then gone to the President of the United States and said, "Hey, Barack, I appreciate you putting me in charge, making me the point person on Ukraine. However, I am conflicted. Not personally, I could do the job just fine, but there's an appearance of impropriety. There is the appearance of a conflict of interest because my son, yes, the one with the coke problem, the one that was drummed out of the military, yes, that one, the one that left his wife for his brother's widow, yes, that one, who then dumped the widow and a week later married a chick he just met, yes, that one. Yes, he's currently being sued for paternity by somebody else, a stripper. But that's beside the point. My son is now receiving a boatload of money from the company that the really big corrupt company that caused all kinds of problems in Ukraine and is responsible for a chunk of the corruption that we're allegedly trying to root out. Therefore, I can no longer be your point person on Ukraine. On Ukrainian policy. I'm sorry, Mr. President. I've spoken to my idiot son, and he's not willing to give up those big fat checks that show up every month. Therefore, since he won't do what I asked him to do, I then must step back when it comes to policy regarding Ukraine." That's what should have happened. No question that should have happened. You've got Kent right there saying, "I briefed the vice president's staff on this, said this could look bad." I'm sure, I mean, it's more than look bad, way more than look bad, especially after Joe Biden comes in and says, "Fire the guy who's looking into the corruption of that company that's paying my son a ton of money." Even if Joe Biden didn't recuse himself, didn't step back, didn't say, "I'm too conflicted, I can't do this," after being briefed just because his son was on the board of this company that the United States government itself had determined was corrupt and shady and involved in money laundering and all sorts of things. Even if that wasn't enough, when it came time for Joe Biden to allegedly execute the order by Barack Obama that Ukraine fire this one particular prosecutor that he said was corrupt, that at that point, Joe Biden should have said, "Look, Barack, I'm being your point person. It's already a little shady me being a point person in Ukraine while my son is literally just shoveling money out of Ukraine and into his own pockets. But if you want me to give the ultimatum that this prosecutor has to be fired, that I think is too much. That would look too bad because that prosecutor is looking into the company that's paying my son a ton of money. So maybe you could send somebody else. Maybe you could send the Secretary of State. Maybe you could send the Deputy Undersecretary of State. Maybe you could handle it by carrier pigeon." Any of those options would be better from a conflict of interest and the appearance of impropriety standpoint, better than me doing it. But no, Joe Biden didn't do that. According to all reports, Joe Biden, the only time he claims to have spoken to his son about this sweetheart gig that he got was when he told him, "I hope you know what you're doing." That's the quote. "I hope you know what you're doing." And Hunter said, yeah, totally. Know what I'm doing. Oh, man, I got a cold or something. My nose is bleeding. Rusty pipes." Yeah, that was it. "You better know. I hope you know what you're doing." He did know what he was doing. He was hammering big fat checks from a company that only put him on its board because his vice president father was in charge of Ukrainian policy. Then that company just miraculously started to drop Hunter Biden's name in all sorts of documents and requests for relief from government action and sanctions and a little bit what seems like lobbying. They're apparently looking into whether or not Hunter Biden was doing any lobbying in regards to Burisma, which, again, would be illegal, as we learned in the Paul Manafort case. If you are representing a foreign entity, but you do not register as a foreign agent, that is punishable up to and including the rest of your natural life and the lives of your first two children in prison. It's different, though, because it was Joe Biden that was doing it. To put a fine point on this issue, Representative Elise Stefanik used her time quite well by laying out the case that Burisma, again, the company that hired Hunter Biden, was labeled corrupt by the Obama administration, was very suspicious to the Obama administration. And since Joe Biden was the point person on Ukraine policy for the Obama administration, that should have raised some concerns from the vice president and from his son. Because let's not forget, knowing all of this, knowing that this company was suspected at a minimum of corruption by the United States government and investigated by the United States government and pressuring the Ukrainian government, at least back in the day, to investigate this company, still Hunter Biden knew that and said, you know what, though? They're offering me a ton of money. I'm going to go with it. He still joined the company, and Joe Biden still had no problem with it. Listen to this little line of inquiry and speechifying by Congresswoman Elise Stefanik.
And you testified that the issue of corruption in Burisma was in the U.S. interest because, quote, and this is from your deposition, we had made a commitment to the Ukrainian government in 2014 to try to recover an estimated tens of billions of stolen dollars of stolen assets out of the country. Is that correct?
That is a stolen assets that were in the name of the owner of Burisma, Mykola Zlochevsky. He was the one who we believed had stolen the money.
Sure. So the first case, this was the first case that the U.S., the U.K. and Ukraine investigator worked on was against the owner of Burisma.
That's correct.
And this was during the Obama administration.
That's correct.
So for the millions of Americans viewing, the first investigation against the owner of Burisma was under President Obama's administration.
That's correct.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, absolutely, positively. Yet, knowing all of that, Hunter Biden still joined the board. And Joe Biden never said, hey, Hunter, look, I get it. You're a screw up. You know, you're a total screw up. But you can't do this one. I know you got sweetheart deals in all of your business because your last name is Biden and you're my kid and I'm vice president. But this one, I'm overseeing policy for Ukraine, and we as a government are accusing this company of being of major league corruption and stealing a ton of money. You can't take this gig. I get the, you know, we'll find you another sweetheart deal somewhere. It just can't be this one. Nope. Did not happen. According to Joe Biden, the only thing he ever said to his son was, hope you know what you're doing. Hope you know what you're doing, which is code for don't get caught. You better not embarrass me by getting caught. Not you better not embarrass me, period, which would end a normal person's sentence. But you better not screw this up and embarrass me by getting caught. Well, Hunter Biden got caught. Democrats are still trying to run blocker for him, but thanks to the hearing yesterday and thanks to Democrats, the American people are seeing it, seeing it more and more. There may have been more people watching yesterday who are first hearing about this than ever before. It just doesn't bode well. So what did the media focus on? Oh, they focused on this is a devastating day. They focused on a phone call that was new. There was some new news to come out of yesterday. It was shocking that acting Ambassador Taylor said, oh, by the way, I just found out the other day, and I don't know how you just find out the other day from somebody who's on your staff, but I just found out the other day that a staffer of mine claims to have overheard a phone call between Ambassador Volker and the President of the United States the day after the call with the Ukrainian president. Somehow he managed to hear President Trump's end of the conversation as well. I don't know, maybe he claims that Volker's phone is turned up all the way because he's partially deaf. Who knows? But he's saying that, he said he overheard the president asking about the investigation. Now, this is the day after the phone call. the day after the phone call. You really think that the day after the phone call, where Ukrainian government didn't know that there was any hold or delay on the military aid, then they wouldn't know for more than a month later. Do you really think that after that phone call, 24 hours later, the president of the United States would call up the ambassador's special envoy to Ukraine and say, hey man, what's the status on that thing I casually dropped a vague reference to yesterday? And the president, is he going to do it? Are we going to get our investigation and dig up all this dirt on Joe Biden? Does that really seem believable? The next day you're going to call up and find this out? Of course it's not believable. But somehow, Mr. Taylor claims to have just remembered this, or his staffer just remembered this the other day and just conveyed it to him. And it's just another, that was the big story. Ooh, man, Taylor had another bombshell story, which again, if you do the logic, how many people disconnected is that? You've got Taylor himself, back to his staffer, who overheard a phone call with Volker, who was talking to the president of the United States. That's four people removed from the guy giving the testimony before Congress, before you get to the point where you get to the president of the United States. And then another question would be, why is Taylor conveying this information for the first time in this open hearing? Where the hell is his staffer? If this staffer was important enough to be hanging out with people important enough to be on the phone with the president of the United States, why wasn't the staffer called? Why didn't the staffer mention this much earlier? Maybe not at the time, because it's absurd, but once this impeachment inquiry started over a month ago, one would think that the staffer would then come in and say, hey, wait a second, boss, I remember this thing, and we were in a Chuck E. Cheese, and I overheard the president talking about this investigation. Why didn't it come up until yesterday? Well, because why not? I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody bothered to ask. Democrats aren't interested in where their information comes from. They don't care how sketchy and shady and unbelievable it is. What they want to do is get it out into the public consciousness. That's all that matters. It can be debunked. It can be blown out of the water. It can be nuked later. But just get it out there in the public consciousness. They just need somebody at these hearings to say some things. They know that they will be parroted and replayed on network news and cable news nonstop, and then it will become part of the public consciousness. If a witness a day or two later comes back and completely contradicts that, do you really think CNN or MSNBC are going to dedicate much, if any, time to correcting the record? They're the broken record. That's their business model. That's their political agenda. They have no interest in correcting the record. They're happy and willing to let the lie stand, because a lie told first and told often enough will stand, especially when it comes out of the people's mouths who are supposed to be credible and supposed to be the truth tellers. It was a shocking revelation. And that was the thing that the Democrats thought, well, this is it. Chuck Todd, Brian Wilson, or Brian Williams, all the clowns over at CNN, this was the thing that they focused on. My God, somebody overheard a phone conversation with the president of the United States. That was their bombshell. That was the big thing. 8 hours of testimony, or 6 hours of testimony, or whatever the hell it was, of testimony. And third and fourth hand information, twice removed, was their big bombshell. Well, I guess that wasn't the only takeaway. Over at the Washington Post, they decided to get really serious about their impeachment coverage. Congressman Jim Jordan, who was added to the committee last minute for these hearings, and thank God he was. He's a great questioner and has a great presentation style. He also doesn't wear a jacket with his suit. You know, he's got the shirt and tie on, but he doesn't walk around with a jacket. And the Washington Post finds this too much to bear. They have a piece in the Washington Post today, not even kidding. This is the headline. For dignity's sake, Jim Jordan, put on a jacket. Really? Of course, Representative Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio, took his seat Wednesday morning at the opening of the public impeachment hearings on Capitol Hill, wearing nothing but his shirt sleeves, no suit jacket. That's how Jordan dresses. It's his power move, his sartorial chest thump. People have too much time on their hands. All the other members of the House Intelligence Committee turned up in suits and ties and other business attire, but Jordan? But not Jordan. Everyone else was willing to offer at least a symbolic nod to decorous formality, to that old-fashioned notion of civility. Jordan announced himself as the man who was itching to rumble. He was the guy who came not to do as the Constitution demands with measured deliberation, but to brawl. All because he didn't wear his jacket. It's like a 1,000-word piece in the Washington Post about how Jim Jordan is so disrespectful to the institution and to his colleagues because he doesn't wear a suit jacket very often. If you ever see him on TV, he's never got a suit jacket on. According to Jordan, by the way, even mentioned in the piece, he just doesn't like it. It restricts his movement, and I can vouch for it. I went to a dinner last night in Washington, D.C., a friend of my wife's is now the head of an organization in Washington, D.C., so they had their annual gala, and to show the flag and show support for her friend, we went down there to the dinner, we're sitting next to Ben Carson at our table at dinner. We're at the head table. It was pretty cool. Ben Carson has been on this show. Very nice guy, and his wife was there as well. Very nice lady. Enjoyed that immensely. James O'Keefe was there too. It was a good time. Everybody had to wear a suit. And, you know, if I had to move around and gyrate a lot or flail my arms, or if I was going to be pointing and holding things up, it would have been uncomfortable wearing a suit. It's not a straight jacket, but wearing a jacket is restricting a little bit. And Jim Jordan, for whatever reason, doesn't want to deal with it. He's a free human being allowed to do this. If Frederica, whatever the heck her name is, the one congresswoman from Texas, Frederica Wilson, I think, can dress like a weirdo auctioneer at a clown rodeo, Jim Jordan can walk around in his shirt sleeves. But the Washington Post finds this horribly disrespectful to the institution itself and to his colleagues and says it's time to put a damn jacket on. If that's all the opposition has against you at the end of day one of impeachment hearings, your opposition has nothing. That's an indication of how weak the case was. But that's not going to stop Democrats from pushing forward. And AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whose name you have to say like that or it's a hate crime, was on either CNN or MSNBC, it doesn't really matter which, talking about impeachment. And she says basically, not even basically, it's what she says. I'll play it for you in a second. She says that it doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. What matters is the Democrats need something to unify behind for the election. And if it just happens to be impeachment, so be it. We don't care. Then we must pursue impeachment because it unifies Democrats. Here, don't take my word for it. Here's AOC in her own words.
At the end of the day, we have to be able to come together as a caucus. And if it is this Ukrainian allegation that is what brings the caucus together, then I think we have to run with however we unify the House.
Yeah, it's a weak-ass case, but it brings Democrats together, and we've got to come together if we're going to win the election next year. Therefore, if it works for the Democratic Party, whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant. Whether there's an actual impeachable offense is irrelevant. We must move forward because it unifies Democrats. I would say, can you believe that? But of course you can believe that. It's AOC. That's how she is. She says incredibly stupid things in an incredibly earnest way because she's blissfully unaware of her own ignorance. She's a lot like Eric Swalwell. I would say she's Eric Swalwell who pees sitting down, but I suspect that Eric Swalwell himself pees sitting down as well. That's just me. So that was basically day one of the impeachment hearing. That's it. Like, honestly, going into it, I was nervous. It's like, okay, what are they going to do? What are they going to come up with? Democrats are not going to go public without some kind of plan, without some kind of idea. They must have something here that is really going to catch fire with the American public. If they're, you don't call the American public together and say, hey, everybody, pay attention to what we're doing here. This is wildly important. If you don't have something that you think is going to resonate with the American public, except that's what the Democrats did. I don't know if they really think that the American people are sitting around going, I really have to fret about the way that the United States deals with Ukraine. That keeps me up at night. But it's clearly not the case. And if this is the best case that the Democrats could put forward, if this was their star witness, their start, their ace, the future looks bright for the forces opposing impeachment. Now, again, I could be eating my words next week because Friday there's round two, but it seems highly unlikely that they wouldn't stay. You know, you don't put a star witness you really think is going to land a knockout blow on a Friday. You don't put anything in the news on a Friday if you think it's going to make news, because it won't make the paper. Most people don't watch the lowest rated night in news is Fridays, because people are doing other things. They don't have to work on Saturday. On Saturday, nobody pays attention to the news. By Sunday, the Sunday shows are so wildly unpopular that nobody will be watching them. And then come back to Monday, there'll be something else for the media to talk about. So you basically, you do things on Friday that you want buried. That's why during the Clinton administration, they released every piece of embarrassing information on a Friday, generally before a holiday weekend. So again, I could be wrong. I'll hedge my bets a little bit, but I'm going to put $95 on red and $5 on black just in case. So at least I come out with, you know, $10. At a minimum, that Democrats' case gets weaker from here on out. And it started off incredibly, incredibly weak. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I know I thought I would get to some other things, but this impeachment hearing was just so ridiculous. And it's really all that anybody's talking about today. We'll get into the rest of the news, and I'm sure there'll be a ton of reaction and spinning like a top tomorrow that we can dissect and have fun with on the Friday edition of the show as we get ready for the big Lee Smith interview Friday as well. Have a great Thursday. The weekend is almost upon us. I'll see you tomorrow.
Where is the impeachable offense in that call? Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
Heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another. You've been messing around.